Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay, Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of the New York Times bestseller, Fast, Feast, Repeat, as well as the book that started it all, Delay, Don't Deny. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than denying myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 407 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. Today, I'm here with Anne-Marie Caron. Anne-Marie lives in Sarnia, Ontario, and she is a travel agent who also works for the local school board in custodial maintenance. Welcome, Anne-Marie.
Hi, Jen.
Well, it is great to talk to you today. And you know I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting, and when was that?
So menopause actually brought me to intermittent fasting. I just thought, I found that I was creeping up a little bit. And last February, on my brother's birthday, actually, February 13th, so I've just celebrated my one-year fastiversary, I decided that I needed to find my way to where I need it to be again. So I had been doing a lot of research, and most of the research I was looking at was for hormonal stuff, trying to find something that would get rid of the menopausal weight gain and whatnot. So in doing that, I had come across just a couple of different articles about fasting and intermittent fasting. And then, to be honest, I was trying real hard to remember how I came across you, and I can't. I'm sorry. It's the age thing. My memory's gone.
So if you're looking up fasting, eventually you'll see something about me somewhere. Yeah.
So I stumbled upon your book, and I loaded it up on my Audible and listened to it as I was at work, and the rest is sort of history.
So you listened to the book on Audible, and it just made a lot of sense then.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, I jumped right in. I started my 16-8. I think I did that for about a month. Then I opened I guess, closed my window. I had a longer window. So I went into, like, I think by month two, I was doing 18, 19 hours fasting. And that's about where I sit. Like, I do bounce around sometimes. I'm never really consistent. Minimum, I'll do 16. Every once in a while, I'll throw in like a 14 or 15 just because, you know, life takes me that way. But typically, I run between 17 to 19 hours a day, and I love it. Like, it's amazing what it's done for me and my health and my energy and everything.
Well, I love hearing that, because it really does. It does change our lives, and in ways we may not have expected. Let's backtrack a little bit to menopause and talk about that. And, you know, that comes up a lot. Obviously, it's on my radar since I went through menopause and learned how your body changes as you're going through it. That was quite a wake-up call for me. And, you know, I think that there's suddenly, I mean, it could be, you know, had the little phenomena, like once you buy a car, you see that car everywhere. And it probably was always everywhere. You just never noticed it. Same thing, you know, maybe menopause was always everywhere, but I don't remember seeing it everywhere. Do you remember hearing a lot of people talking about menopause?
I don't. And my mom was, she had a full hysterectomy when she was in her 20s. She ended up with cervical cancer. So she went through it. Like, I do remember her going through it, but I was so young that I don't really remember it. It was different for her than it would be for me, because I still have all my parts and she didn't at 50, right? So it was way different. So she didn't really even have any advice to give me, you know, like, it was just sort of, I was going through it and I had no direction. It was just, figure it out, Amory. That's what you have to do.
And my mother, I tried to ask her about it, and it's like she doesn't remember it. I don't know. I'm like, can you tell me about it? She's like, I don't know, whatever. It just happened. I'm like, okay. Yeah. But it's maybe it's just our generation has been more open with things. That's what I'm hoping that it is. We are finally talking about it, and we want to demystify what goes on
for sure
with our bodies because every single person listening to this is either a woman or knows some women that will go through it, women that are close to you or women that you know. And so it's important to understand what our bodies are doing, but also the bodies of the people that you're close to, understanding what they're going through. So weight gain after menopause is almost a universal experience, and it's because our bodies change biologically. And, you know, a lot of people who are listening might have been long-term intermittent fasters who were maintaining no problem and then went through menopause and then things changed. Intermittent fasting does not prevent weight gain because our bodies change. I mean, okay, when I say that, yes, intermittent fasting can make a big difference in the amount of weight that you gain, but it doesn't mean you're going to gain 0 pounds. Your body is going to change. So let's talk about your weight prior to menopause and then what happened when you went through the transition.
So let's back it up a little bit even further. So about almost 10 years ago, so in 2015, I had been at my highest weight ever. Well, 2014, I guess, is when I would go back to. And I was pushing almost 300 pounds. I was like 284. I had gone through, like, I was doing everything. I was going to Weight Watchers. My food was on point. I was going to the gym 5-6 days a week. I was always, like, everything I was doing was what you should be doing to lose weight, and nothing.
What we were told to do, right? Exactly. When you say should, it's based on the bad advice we had gotten forever.
So I had gone to my doctor and I had said, like, nothing's working. This is 8 months in and I've lost 18 pounds. Like, this doesn't seem to work. I want you to test me, thyroid, whatever you need to do to figure out what's going on with me. And so he had done some blood work and whatnot and came back. I had COPD. So he's like, well, we could put you on synthetic hormones. We could do this. You know, you're always going to struggle until we get the hormones under control. And I'm like, back to the fact my mother had cervical cancer, you know, cancer runs in my family. So I was like, no, this is not an option for me. I am not putting anything synthetic into my body because I don't want to tempt fate type thing. So then I started doing some research and come across bariatric surgery. So in 2015, I had undergone bariatric surgery. I had a Roux-en-Y. So it was like the full, not a sleeve or anything. It was the full thing. So I had that done in January of 2015. And the lowest I got after my surgery was around 170. And I was okay with that. Like I was, obviously I wanted more, but I was satisfied. Like I
and how
was
tall
almost
are
300
you?
Pounds, 5 foot. Okay. I'm just a little girl.
You're a little bitty. Yeah, I can imagine that after being almost 300 pounds, 170, I mean, that is remarkable.
Yeah, it was a lot. Like it was huge. So there is a lot of loose skin, which is frustrating for me, but I've been finding it's not going away, but it definitely is changing. Like I don't even know how to explain it, but it's like the cellulite looks different than it did a year ago. The skin hangs a little bit differently than it did a year ago. So I don't know if I'll ever lose it completely with the autophagy, but it's definitely doing something for sure.
And for anybody who's listening and wondering, autophagy, you know, is our body's cellular housekeeping system. And Jason Fung talks about in his work, a lot of people who have lost 100 pounds plus not having excess skin when they lose it with fasting because autophagy eats up that excess skin. Now, one thing I have learned as time has gone on is that our age when we go through this is a factor because postmenopause, we lose a lot of skin elasticity just in general. Like my skin is different now postmenopause than it was when I initially lost the weight. Like areas that were tighter in 2018, for example, don't look like they did after I've gone through menopause. But if we look at every single person who goes through menopause, skin elasticity tends to change. So that's just a very normal part of the process of getting older. And so I think that that's a factor for everybody who's listening. If you are premenopausal, you are more likely to have better skin tightening than someone who is postmenopausal. And that's just the way bodies tend to work.
Yeah, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
It really is. And it is what it is. One thing living at the beach has really taught me is to appreciate all the bodies. You know, I love seeing the 80-year-old women walking down the beach just unapologetically, just living in their bodies. You know, that I want that to be me.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. So I got down to 170.
All right.
Ish. Like I bounced, you know, I had like a 5-pound bounce, you know, between 170, 175. But like I said, I was okay with that. I was fine in my skin. We went away in 2022. My son took a picture of me and I was like, oh my. And I got back, I hadn't got on the scale for months, probably even a year, right? Because I was comfortable. I was okay. And being that I had lost that much weight, I was like, yep, I'm okay. This is where I'm going to be. And that's fine with me. But then when I seen the picture, I was like, no, this is not good no more.
Uh-oh.
So yeah. I jumped back on the scale and I was dreading to see what I was hoping and praying it wouldn't be over the 200, and it wasn't, but it was close. I was back up to 191. So I was like, okay, so you got to do something. And that's when I found intermittent fasting, and now I bounce between 145 and 150. Like, so it's, I still have a little bit to go. Like I'd like to get down in the 130s or 125 would be my ultimate goal, but am I going to do that at 50? I don't know. We'll see.
It's hard to know. Your body is going to do what it does. That's the most important thing, right? That I've learned over the years. And it's the same for my body. My body does what it does. That is amazing. So you, with just the bariatric surgery, you were able to get down to 170, 175. And how long did you kind of hang out in that range?
For the whole time. So my surgery was in 2015. And I started fasting in 2022. So I maintained it. Like it wasn't, well, I guess I didn't maintain it because I went up 20 pounds. But, right. But like
you're
I was slowly going up. Yeah, I was definitely, it was a slow creep. Like I didn't even realize it until I seen the picture of myself on the cruise. And I'm like, no.
Those cruise photos. That's what got me, a cruise photo. So funny. All right. So you started fasting in 2022. And so with the
2023, sorry.
Okay. 2023. You started fasting. Okay. Sorry. Oh, that's right. I knew that. 2022 is when you saw the gain on the scale for the first time. All right. So 2020, you've been fasting for about a year. So in that year, you've gone down about what would you say, 45 pounds?
45, 50 pounds, yeah.
That's it's amazing.
Like I've noticed, because I lost a dramatic amount. I wouldn't say I lost a dramatic amount, but it appeared that. Like my recomposition in the first 3 months was insane, but it was only 12 pounds, right? But it was 12 pounds of whatever. Like I've lost almost 30 inches throughout my whole body. I've lost eight on my waist alone.
Wow. Okay. So that's amazing. See, that's it's the fasting insane. Difference. You know, the surgery allowed your body, you know, you lost the weight because you're eating less because you have your digestive system has been replumbed, if you will, right? So you can't eat as much food. But when you started fasting and just added that clean fast every day, 8 inches around your waist is remarkable.
In a year. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, so immediately.
And it was, like I said, it was the last couple of months, like I hung out in the 150s for about a month or 6 weeks or so. And it seems that's what my 140s are going to be doing too, because like I bounce, like it's always doesn't matter what day I get on the scale. You know, one day it's going to be 147. The next day it might be 149. Maybe it might be 150, but it's always right in that. Like so it's when I start getting down, it takes a break and then it'll go down a couple more pounds. Then it'll take a break.
That's what my weight did. It was very much like that back when I was losing weight and still weighing every day and finding my weekly average. It would do that. It would like almost like a stair step. It would go down, then it would fluctuate around there for a while, and then it would go down, then it would fluctuate around there. Like after I would hit a new low, it always bounced back up. You know, it always did all that up and down. So really, a lot of changes could still happen from this point.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES. Promo code IFSTORIES10. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for clean eating, delivering pre-portioned and prepped quality whole foods with limited processed ingredients. Green Chef sends organic, fresh produce, responsibly sourced proteins, and chef-designed recipes in every box for satisfying, nourishing, and convenient meals that fit in beautifully to my cleanish lifestyle, and the food is totally window-worthy. Tonight, we're having barbecue sweet potato tacos with cabbage and carrot slaw, black beans, corn, and cheesy tortillas, and they come with Green Chef's chimichurri sauce. So good. Go to greenchef.com/IFStories50 and use the promo code IFStories50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months. That's greenchef.com/IFStories50. And don't forget to use the promo code IFStories50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next 2 months.
You don't know what your body's going to do.
No.
So exciting.
I can see my kneecaps. That's my favorite thing. I haven't been able to see my kneecaps in years.
Wow.
And I actually have them.
I remember that as bones started to emerge. I'm like, oh, there's my ribs. Oh, there's my hip bones.
I just did that yesterday. I was at my mother's house and I'm like, Mom, come here. And I grabbed her hand and I put it on my hip bone and she goes, wow, that's your hip bone.
You have hips. That's true. But unless someone has been, you know, overweight to the point, you really can't feel all those bones.
No.
Being able to feel that, I'm like, ooh, my shoulder, it feels so nice.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
So how has your clothing size changed over this year?
So to be honest, I wasn't really sure what my size was because I was always, I wore tights. I wore comfy clothes. I never really put jeans
stretchy.
On. Yeah, stretchy clothes. And I did that even after the surgery. Like I never really, I guess I could have said, like when I was in and around, like after my surgery, I was probably around a size 14-ish. And now, depending on the jeans, maybe a 4, but definitely a size 6. Like I'm always.
Did you ever dream you would be a 4 to 6?
No, never, never.
In your wildest dreams.
No, my daughter is getting married in August this year. We had gone and done the dress shopping. And when they ordered my dress, they ordered a size 8. And I just put my dress on over the weekend just to sort of get an idea. And it needs to be altered, like for sure. Like there's so much at the back, like I could grab like a handful of material. So I don't know what they're going to alter it down to, but and I'm not doing that until July. Like we're going in July for the alteration. So.
Well, we're good because we're recording this in February. And so you have the potential to need even like if they alter it now, they're going to have to alter it again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Wow. That's so exciting.
We're waiting.
They can't like exchange it for a 6, can they?
They could if it's not out of circulation. You know how dress shops go sometimes, right? Like they take them off the rack. So.
I might go ahead and like see if they would get one. I don't know. I'm trying trying to like see where your body might be. But if they can alter it, then that's fine. They can do magic with alterations.
Sometimes.
That's super exciting. Yeah, that's true. But I know that your daughter has got to be super proud as well.
Yeah, she just had a baby. He's 4 weeks old today, actually. Ah! She's like, Mom, you weigh less than I do. And I'm like, oh, baby gosh. Girl, you just had a baby. Like you're okay.
Yeah. Well, I remember those days of having the new baby and weight does interesting things after birth, right?
Yeah, it does.
I know that you're enjoying that new grandbaby.
Yeah. He's pretty sweet. He's a snuggler. He loves to snuggle, which is kind of cool. I have a 3-year-old too, grandbaby, and he's a little, no, you're my Nana. I'm like, yes, but I'm your brother's Nana too. So it's a transition.
So much fun. I look forward to that day. One day, Will wants to be a dad one day. I don't know if Cal ever will. I'm not sure if they want to. I don't think they've decided. But one day, Will will find somebody.
One day. It's a whole new world, Jen.
Exactly. Well, I can't wait. So that's super exciting. So let's backtrack even more. You know, when we first started talking and you said, you know, after menopause, your weight was creeping up a bit. I just assumed, all right, Anne Marie has never really had much struggle with her weight. She didn't have any struggle until she hit menopause, and that was the very normal weight gain we expect. But then you dropped those numbers on us, and you have struggled with your weight. So let's go back. Most of your adult life. Go back. When did you first feel like you were struggling with your weight?
After baby number one, who is going to be 32 this year. So I had him young. I was 18, never struggled as a teenager. I was always the girl who could eat whatever she wanted and still be in a size 2 or 4 or whatnot. Yeah, never struggled. I was pretty active in high school with sports and stuff. And I never really had that issue, even as a child, never had an issue with my weight. But as soon as I had him, that changed. I went, when I got pregnant with him, I think I was like 115 pounds and I was 175 by the time I had him. So after him, you know, I got back down a little bit, but between him and his sister, and there's 5 years between them, I had crept back up all the way up almost to 200 pounds before baby number two. Then I took a break from having babies for a while. And then she was 11 by the time I had my baby number three. I was well over 200 pounds when I had him. So I had always, and like I said, I'm little, like I'm only 5 foot. Like my 8-year-old is taller than I am. Like I'm little bitty. So carrying all that for all that time, like my son, my eldest son, he looks at me and he says, Mom, I've never, ever, like his whole entire life, I've been overweight. Like he's never seen me Whereas my younger one, so I say I have an 8-year-old, he's an adopted child, but my youngest biological, he's 14, he doesn't remember me being overweight because I had my surgery. Like, yeah, he remembers me being chunky, right? But he does not remember me at almost 300 pounds, whereas my older two, they do, right? So this is all new for them. Like he said to me, I don't ever remember you being this little.
Right. Oh, yeah. I know that feels really good because he's watched you struggle over the years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for when you were struggling, when you were gaining the weight, you know, did you try diets? What did you try over those years?
Everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything. Weight Watchers was kind of my go-to. Weight Watchers kind of worked up for me. Like I would never get way, way down, but I would always go with my mom. My mom had some real great success with Weight Watchers. So I think that was my motivation because I watched her succeed. But I had done Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, like you name it. I didn't do any of the crazy hokey stuff that you did. Like I didn't do any of the shots or anything like
right.
that. But any of the programs, yeah, I probably have done it at some point in my life. I did low carb. I did low fat. I did keto for a little tiny bit. I liked keto. Like I liked the, I'm a huge protein freak. Like I love protein. So keto worked for the intake. I loved it, but it didn't do anything for me. Like I didn't lose any weight. Like it was, I felt okay, but I wasn't really losing anything. So I was like, meh, I don't want to give up bread. I love bread. I'm not giving that up for the rest of my life if it's not going to do anything for me. Even though I love the diet or the whatever I'm ingesting, it's not worth it for me to give up. I love fruit too, so I couldn't
right.
give up my fruit. You know?
So if you had seen amazing results, like if you had tried keto and you had immediately lost a ton of weight, you could have stuck to it. But because you didn't see a ton of weight loss, there was no reason to stick with it.
No.
Exactly.
And my brother did keto and he lost like a huge amount of weight for his keto journey. But then he actually once, because he was sort of in his maintenance phase, and once I started fasting, he kind of picked up the fasting thing too, because he's like, well, this kind of works. I think he's still fasting. Like we haven't really talked about it a whole lot lately, but like he was, obviously he took a break for Christmas, but he was right before Christmas, you know? And so I think he went back to it.
That's awesome. So did he stop with the keto and just start with the fasting, or does he implement both of them?
Yeah, for a little bit. Yeah, for sure. Like, I think he still tends to be keto-ish. Like, he was real stringent with himself. Like, he was one of those people that however many carbs he was allowed in a day, that's how many he had. Like, he
Me too.
Gave up.
That's how I followed it. When I did keto, I was like one of those people, if they said eat 20 grams of carbs or less, I did. And I didn't even use all that net carb stuff that they're doing now. Like, you know, you subtract out the fiber or whatever. I was like, 20 grams of carbs. I'm going to do it. I did it religiously.
Yeah, and that's the way he did it. And he did, like, he lost a lot of weight too. And he looks, it's crazy because him and I always, well, he struggled even a little bit as a child, but as he hit teenage years, he sort of grew out of that. But we both struggled through our adult lives with our weight. And now we're like, so little, you know,
it's I love
like,
it.
It's kind of like, I should, I don't know, maybe I'll find a picture of before picture of him and I, and then one of us after and just send it to you. Cause like, it's so crazy. The differences between
I
the
would love to
us.
See that. Absolutely. You know, and one, I have two brothers, but one of my brothers is an intermittent faster. And, you know, he had struggled with his weight, not remarkably, but he had the ups and downs with diets and tried the, you know, this diet, that diet, and could lose a little weight here and there. But he's been doing intermittent fasting now for years. And again, we don't talk about it, just like you and your brother, but it's just what he does. It's just how he lives now. He waits, he opens his window, he eats, and he's maintaining, you know, a nice, healthy weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really great way to live. Did you watch? I know you said your mother went through Weight Watchers, but did she really struggle with her weight, or did she manage to maintain it? And your dad, was this something you saw at home?
So both my parents struggle still to this day with their weight. My mom is diabetic, and I was trying real hard to get her fasting, and she was for a little bit. She was only doing like a 12 or 14 hour window, which, like I said to her, that's still going to work, Mom.
Yeah.
And then at one point they had taken her off her metformin. And I said to her, so she was struggling with the fasting, though. She was struggling with the taking her pills and all of that. So she, I think she's now back on Weight Watchers. Both her and my okay. dad are doing Weight Watchers. So they know I still fast. And every once in a while, what happens if I don't do 16 hours? So I think she's still thinking it, like it's still there. But I think she wasn't seeing the results that I was seeing. So it was a little disheartening. But she's also older than me. And she's got diabetes and she has high blood pressure. So she's got things that are, and that's what I had said to her, you need to realize that even if you don't see the weight loss, things are happening. My cousin is another one who has struggled a lot throughout her adult. And I had her going on fasting. And then she said, it wasn't working. And I'm like, are you sure it's not working? And she's like, it's not working. I've only lost 10 pounds. And I said, but have you gained it back? And she's like, no. And I said, then it's working.
Right.
And then exactly. She's like, so then I sent her just last week, because it was my 1 year, I sent her my before and my after. And she's like, she called me a name. And she's like, oh, no, you're really not. You're really not. She said, but I can't believe it. She goes, you've just motivated me. But then you, at the same time, you made me feel sad. I'm like, well, I'm sorry I made you feel sad. But if it will get you back motivated to, like, she's still doing black coffee and all of that, but she's just not. She's not watching her windows. And so hopefully she's jumped back on, you know, like I don't ever want to push, but I know how much it's changed my life. And I, all these people that I love and care about, like I wish that they could just see that change too, you know?
Yeah. They have to really want to do it. That's the key. And that's the hardest part. We can't want it more for our loved ones than they want it.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, does your mom read books? Does she like to read books or does she like to listen to things?
I've given her your books and Dr. Jason Fung's books.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. Like she would read it before she would listen to it. I'm an audible freak because I always have headphones in. So it doesn't matter if I'm, you know, driving or working or sitting at home and the kids are watching TV. Like I always have my headphones in. So I'm always listening to something. My mom, unfortunately, isn't like that. So she's not but yeah, I would really like to. We're all going in a couple of weeks for another cruise. We're going, it's my 50th birthday. So we're going on and I'm going to give her the book, like the physical book, so she can read it while we're on vacation, because that's probably the only time she would do it, you know, when she's not at home with a list of things to do.
Well, I was definitely going to suggest the diabetes code, but, you know, I gave it to my dad and I don't know if he read it or not, but he didn't do anything after I gave it to him. I had really hopes that he would, but he didn't. But, you know, I wonder if something like the 28-day fast start day by day would help her, the new one.
Yeah.
Because I actually have a section in there about a study that they did with diabetes and people who were doing intermittent fasting and like reversed their diabetes, like put it in, I think they called it remission.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would be very highly motivated if I had diabetes, but, and I know you would be too, but not everybody, I guess, because I guess if you're just like the way that our generation tends to treat menopause differently, we're like, oh no, I'm not just going to settle for that. Maybe we're the same way with like, okay, no, I'm not just going to develop diabetes like, you know, like my dad, I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah, definitely. She is motivated for her health for sure. And I think she's more motivated for my dad's health than she is her own. And that's just her being my mom. Like she's always the caretaker, right? But I would really like to see both of them get some sort of benefit. And maybe with once they start seeing the weight loss with Weight Watchers, because it always works for my mom. She's one of those, she can go back, like she's a lifetime member. So it's just, she goes and starts paying again when she, but she, once maybe they start seeing the weight loss, maybe I can convince them again to look at fasting again.
You know, I'm a fan of the freedom of intermittent fasting and not counting, but maybe mom would be willing to, hey, mom, how about you just tack on some intermittent fasting with your Weight Watchers?
Yeah.
That might really be, you know, be motivating to her. And like I've heard people over the years say that when they did Weight Watchers, they would like save up all their points and eat them at the end of the day. And they were accidentally doing intermittent fasting and they didn't really know it. Like I've heard people say that before. So she might be able to first wrap her mind around the idea of doing intermittent fasting with Weight Watchers with the idea of eventually now she's just doing intermittent fasting and can drop the counting. So something to think about.
The counting's a pain.
It really is. And I was just thinking what I said earlier about, you know, our generation versus our parents' generation. We can't really, I guess, make any blanket statements about entire generations, but maybe we're just a little bit more likely to challenge the status quo. I'm not sure what it is. And I mean, I know that people in our parents' generations were also status quo challengers, you know, the whole like, my mother was a hippie, so she certainly challenged the status quo, but I just hope that we can spread this message to everybody, our parents, our children, people all everywhere in between, that there are things we can do so that we don't have to follow that path of, well, now I just have diabetes and now I'm just going to be on medication forever. We don't have to accept that that's just normal.
I had gestational diabetes with my last baby, and I think, and then unfortunately we lost his dad.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
When he was 15 months old. So that, and he was a large man. So that sort of motivated me to go, okay, you know what? I'm not leaving my babies, and I need to change something. And so that got me in the process of, okay, what can I do to change what needs to be done? And that led me to bariatric, and that led me, you know, eventually, and now I'm here. And I don't stress about anything anymore. I actually feel healthier than I have ever, like that I can remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're exactly right that there's just something about a wake-up call that you watch and you see your parents, your loved ones struggling with weight and health, and know that the weight had something to do with the health issues. And so that really motivates you to want to do something different. That makes a whole lot of sense. And again, that's been a big part of my motivation as well, watching my dad struggle. So So let's talk about how you structure your eating window. And also the fact that you've had bariatric surgery is a factor here, because sometimes people feel like they can't do intermittent fasting after bariatric surgery. So tell us how you make that work for you.
So because I can't eat a whole lot in one sitting, I do have 2 meals minimum, like, and maybe a snack or whatever. But my window, like my eating window, is no more than 5 hours.
Okay.
Maybe the odd time if there's a party or whatever, you know, I might have a longer one then. But I eat from basically noon to 5, give or take. If sometimes I'll go to 1 to 6 or whatever. But basically, I don't really, I guess I just count my fasting hours. So if once I listen to my body, like if I go 16 hours and I'm hungry, like I know the difference between hungry and just needing to have a tea or something. I know what that feels like. So if I'm hungry, I'll eat. I don't beat myself up about it. So if I end up having an 8-hour window that day because I was hungry, well, that's okay, because then maybe tomorrow I'll only have a 4-hour window. But I do still do the small meals, just because my body won't, I can't sit down and eat a whole lot at any given time. So like, even sometimes if I have a tea, it fills me for an hour or two, you know, like it's like my body, my belly is still little. And so I can't put in. So I never thought that I would be a 1-meal-a-day person. I probably never, ever will, just because my body will say, nope, you can't. You have to stop eating. Because it gets uncomfortable. As a bariatric patient, if I eat too much, it's painful. It can be painful.
And I want to reiterate that 1 meal a day is not the goal, right? I don't want everybody to think that they should be trying to get to 1 meal a day. And it's all a matter of, like, what I love what you just said, Anne Marie, that you really listen to your body. And people who are new have a hard time with that. They're like, how do I do that? How do I know? How do I know if I'm really hungry versus if I'm not? But you do know. But it takes time to figure that out. Once you figure it out, you really, really will know. Trust me.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't, when I started, I didn't believe that either. But now I do.
See, we're telling
like,
you.
You guys are all just a bunch of crackpots. Like, no way am I going to know what you're talking about.
Because people will ask in the community, they'll be new in their first month or two, and they're like, but how do I know if I'm really hungry? I'm like, you will know. It's a different feeling. You will figure it out. And We've been so out of tune with our hunger and satiety signals for so many years. We have to learn to trust our bodies again. And there are people that have a hard time with like the concept of appetite correction. Dr. Bert Hering created that terminology, and I really love it. But people think that appetite correction only means your body tells you when you've had enough so you can stop. But appetite correction is also your body telling when you that you need to eat more. That is part of your hunger signal that you're supposed to be in tune with. So you can trust if you really need to eat more. Now, if your body's eat some more Doritos, I really need those. That is not that is not your body telling you the truth.
No.
But if your body, you know, is craving vegetables and a healthy protein source and real food and you're actually hungry, then that's it's a craving for, you know, junky foods or ultra processed foods is not what I'm talking about here.
No.
It's actual hunger.
Yeah, for sure.
Has your taste in food changed at all?
Yes, it has. Like, I'm not saying I don't indulge, because I still do. But like for example, my husband went this morning to get me my tea, and he got the boys some donuts. And he's like, I got you your Boston cream. I can't eat a Boston cream donut anymore. It's actually disgusting to me. Like, I just don't like, I don't like it. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. You can have that. So I do crave more like whole foods. I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying I don't. I still love pizza. Pizza is never going to leave my diet ever in my whole entire life.
Yeah.
It's going to be there forever. I'm a huge cheese person. So I love my cheeses. But I do the meal kits too. Like, I have my weekly deliveries. And so that really keeps me on track, at least for our main meal of the day. It's always whole foods. It's nothing processed. I'm really working towards one of my New Year's resolutions this year was to get rid of the processed foods. Now, that being said, I have a 14-year-old and an 8-year-old at home. So it's a difficult task, but I'm trying really hard. You know, like, I bought a whole coconut the other day, cut up and stuff. And I went to go get some today and it's gone. And I said, where did the coconut go? My 14-year-old ate it all. So I'm like, okay, well, at least he's eating coconut.
Exactly. That's right. And that can be a real challenge, but we're also in charge of the buying. You know, I've heard a lot of people say over the years, well, I have to keep chips in the house because I have teenagers. I'm like, but do you though? Do you really?
No, yeah,
because just because your teenager would really like for you to have chips in the house does not mean your teenager needs to have chips in the house,
exactly.
Right? Because we want to teach them, and I would never do it through the lens of weight loss for kids, but I would talk about nutrients and what your body needs. And I would 100% teach kids, now that I have the vocabulary to do it, now that, you know, because the word ultra-processed foods, that terminology didn't come about until pretty recently. If I could go back, that's what I would teach my kids. I would teach them about nutrients from real foods and ultra-processed foods. And I wouldn't say, no, we never eat ultra-processed foods, but I would say these are not foods that are nourishing our body well. So we need to put our nutrients in and then think of the ultra-processed foods as, like, you know, just more like entertainment foods.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's okay. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I'll still entertain my mouth with some Doritos here and there, but they're not going to satisfy me.
No.
And
that's
teach
what
your kids to recognize that.
Yeah.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, when I do indulge in things that I would have eaten 2 years ago or a year ago even, it's not the same. I don't get the same satisfaction that I did back then. Like I said, I cannot eat it. I loved Boston cream donuts. Like, it was the rule in my house that if donuts were brought in, Boston cream was for mom. Nobody touches it. Now I don't even care. You can have it. You know,
I get it. Like, there was like a certain kind of Pop-Tart that I loved. It was like a, I think they've changed the name of what it's called, but it was a chocolate Pop-Tart that had vanilla cream on the inside and a white frosting on it. So I don't know what that is, but that was my kind of Pop-Tart. I loved that kind of Pop-Tart. And I would buy them and I would hide them and I would eat them. That was mine. I would not eat that right now. If you gave me a box of it and said, you have to eat this, I'd be like, oh, gross. No, I don't want that. That tastes gross. But I loved it. Like, who is that girl that loved those Pop-Tarts? It's crazy.
I know. Yeah. To be honest, when I got into intermittent fasting, when I listened to your book and the delay, don't deny, I'm like, oh, this is perfect because I can still eat all this garbage that I love and it'll be fine. And for the first little bit, I did eat all that garbage that I loved. But now it's like, and like I said, I'm not saying that we don't go and get fast food. We don't go, like we do. We're a busy family. We have a lot of after school activities. But I focus a lot of the meal kit planning around my weekday. So if I do indulge, maybe it's on the weekend. So, but like my whole week, it's whole foods. It's, you know, I don't really have anything. And the amount of produce that we go through now, we never used to go through that much. Like I would throw it away before it would get eaten, you know, it would go bad before it would get eaten. And now I can't keep it in the house. So, which is cool because that means my kids are eating it too, right?
That's what I was going to say. You're showing them the power of eating nutritious foods and having the produce around for them. And you're right. You know, it just made me think I need vegetables to be satisfied. Like I need it. Like last night I was making the meal kit that I had for last night was this risotto. When I choose what I want to eat for the week, when I choose my meals, I'm like, what is really going to make me feel satisfied? But I was really looking at the ingredients of this risotto and I was like, all it's got in it is tomatoes. That's not enough vegetables. So I, you know, cobbled together a salad. Yeah. I made my own dressing. I used guacamole and sour cream and a little heavy cream, salt and pepper. That was such a good little avocado dressing, super, oh, and some lemon juice, and then just toss the lettuce in it. Cause I was like, I just got to have something green with this risotto. Yeah. And at the end of the meal, I was super satisfied.
He's like, we have salads all the time now, mom. Like, is this just going to be a thing? And I'm like, yeah, it is. Like you look back, you watch all those old shows, you know, based in the 70s and stuff, like Young Sheldon, and every meal they had a salad on the table.
That's
and
I'm true.
Like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Let's do that. Like, yes, we can still have our veggies on our plate, but let's have a salad too. You know, like there's nothing wrong with that.
Salad is not my favorite food and I don't want it all the time, but if I'm making the dressing myself, I like it a lot more. We actually had an amazing salad. Chad and I went to a restaurant that is at Merle's Inlet Marshwalk. For anybody who's listening, it's called Neptune's. And we just had like our dinner, a little flatbread and some burrata cheese with bread. But the salad, it was a beet salad. It was so good. I never would have eaten this prior to you know, who I am today. I would have been like, that is so disgusting. It was a beet salad with roasted beets and it had arugula and onion.
I don't like arugula.
Oh, so see, I love it. But I would not have liked it before. But that something about the combination of that arugula and the beets and the onion, and it had feta on there and, I don't know, some kind of vinaigrette. And I was like, I cannot get enough of this salad, but who am I?
Yeah. I know. Where did this person come from?
And Chad's like trying to eat the salad too fast. I'm like, quit it. Stop. Don't eat it so fast.
Stop. Save some for me.
Sometimes I just put it on my own plate.
so he can't eat. I'm putting it on my plate if we're trying to share something. But, you know, being able to eat food like that is just a treat.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I love it. So I know that you're active in your job. Do you do anything else for activity, any kind of exercise that you enjoy?
I want to say that I would like to, but I don't.
I get it.
But I do, like, my job, I'm 15,000 steps a day. Like, I work, and I'm,
you
know, lugging around floor machines, and I get my workouts in, for sure.
You're lifting weights.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, like, sure. I talked about in Fast, Feast, Repeat, in the mindset chapter, the study that they did with hotel housekeepers. They told the hotel housekeepers, they told half of them, the work that you do is exercise for your body, and they didn't tell the other group, and the differences in the two groups were remarkable. The people who believed, the housekeepers who believed that what they were doing was great exercise, had better results than the ones who were not told that. So you just keep telling yourself, I am working my muscles, I am working my body. Yeah.
I do love working out. Like, I have a gym membership, and I love that concept. My husband's a gym rat. Like, he goes every day. And I do, like, for the longest time, I was going every day with him. But he's like a 4:30 in the morning gym rat. And you know what? I don't want to do that.
No.
So if I get time in the day, I'll go. Like, I will. But I would like to maybe do some more gym stuff. But I'm not stressing about it, because I still am seeing the changes. And, you know, like, I know what I do every day is work. I feel it in my body, you know, like, I feel in my abs, I feel it all. So I know that I'm doing, what did they call it? Unintentional exercise.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, exercise is a modern invention. The kind of exercise that when I say exercise to someone and they think about jogging or weightlifting or all of that, they didn't used to have all that. People just lived their lives. You would wash the clothes in a big pot and you would work your muscles. You know, the men were out hunting and they're climbing things or whatever. And everything was exercise in our lives. But now we have all these modern conveniences. But if you're working a physical job, you're moving your body.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's important. As we get older, we have to make sure we're doing that. You know, I watched that Blue Zones documentary on Netflix when it first came out, the one that came out in 2023. And it really struck me that one thing all the people in the Blue Zones had in common is they moved their bodies. And it was different. You know, in Greece, they're walking up and down the hills, or in Italy, the hilly mountains are up and down where they live. They live in houses that have multiple stories.
Yeah.
Climbing the stairs. You know, we've been told, oh, as you get older, you need a one-story house so you don't have to climb the stairs. I'm like, I think that's the wrong advice.
I agree.
We need to climb the stairs. And you know, in Japan, they're gardening and doing Tai Chi. And so just making sure we don't lose our muscle mass as we age is so important. However we can make that happen.
I agree. Yeah, 100%.
So let's talk about some of your non-scale victories. You've already mentioned a few. What else?
My biggest non-scale victory is, so my blood type is AB negative. So I used to donate when I had my daughter, who's 25, I hemorrhaged quite significantly. And because I have such a rare blood type, there was nothing in the bank for me. They actually were going to transfuse my mother. Thankfully, they were able to get my hemorrhage under control. But from that point forward, I have been donating blood. That was that wake up moment. You have to contribute, right? I'm the type of person that I would donate blood. And you know how some people, like, you could do 3 months, right? Every 3 months, you can go donate blood. This body was saying, no, you can't. It would take me 9 months, sometimes a year, before my hemoglobin would be high enough that I would be able to donate again. So I was still doing it. I was going every time that I could, I would donate. And then when I started fasting, my doctor is very thorough, and she's been sending me for quarterly blood screens. And so I had gone, my iron had gone up. She was really impressed with that. She was like, I'm vitamin D and iron deficient, so I take pills every day for that. But she was really impressed, and she's like, Amory, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Like, this is amazing. So then I went for the next time. I think it was my 9 months into fasting, and my hemoglobin dropped to 4.3, which is life-threatening. 6 is the threshold, and mine was at 4.3. And she's like, what did you do? And I went, I donated blood. And she goes, no, you don't do that anymore. She goes,
oh gosh,
how long have you been donating blood? And I said, well, for 25 years. And she goes, how often? And I'm like, well, maybe once a year. I said, my body doesn't let me do it anymore. Because you have to have a threshold, right? Like they won't take blood unless you're at a certain threshold. And I said, my body would never get to that threshold. And she goes, you're tanking your hemoglobin every time you donate blood. She goes, I know you want to do that. She said, but you cannot. You are not the person to donate blood. So that was my biggest non-scale. And I don't donate blood. It breaks my heart because I would like to, but I got to keep it for myself.
That's exactly right. We need what we need.
It's mine. I guess I'll keep it.
Yeah.
But I used to get migraines all the time. I used to, like you did, always have ibuprofen or Tylenol in my, always had it. I can't tell you the last time I've put one in my bag. Like I don't get migraines at all anymore.
Love it.
My hot flashes went away. My night sweats went away.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, those were all big ones. My husband was so impressed with the night sweats because it was gross. You know, I'd wake up and
gross.
It was like I just got out of the shower, and he's like,
"It's the weirdest feeling." If you have everyone who's listening, if you haven't been through it, it is bizarre. You are literally like wringing wet with sweat.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It's disgusting.
Your body's going
gone,
haywire.
It's like, yeah. I can't get over the difference in my menopausal journey since I started fasting. And I do think that, like, I used to have plantar fasciitis really bad too. Like, they do still bother me every once in a while. It's not completely gone. If I've been, you know, doing a lot in a day or over a few days, it'll flare up. But yeah, it's like all those little things. I think my eyesight is better. I don't know for sure. I haven't been to the doctor, but yeah, it's just, there's so many.
So many little things you weren't even expecting.
Yeah.
So we are almost out of time. What would you tell someone just starting out with intermittent fasting, or what do you wish you knew when you first started?
So I did do a lot of photos and suggest that 100%. If you're just starting out, make sure you get that before picture because it's amazing the changes you'll see. But again, trust the process. I know a lot of people say that, but when I look at my cousin or my mother or all of these people who things are changing inside that you don't even know, like you have no idea. So don't look at everybody who's had success and think that that's going to be your journey because it might not be. You might be fixing something. Who was it that had the fatty liver? Like
Roxy.
That,
yeah.
Roxy. Yeah. Like that blows me away that she had it. Then now she doesn't. Like that's something people live their whole lives with and there's nothing really that can be done. And so that's what I want people to, it might not look like you're making strides on the outside, but you have no idea what's going on inside. And if you just stick with it and know that, just remind yourself every day, if you are in autophagy for X amount of hours, guess what? Like you're fixing something. You just might not know what it is.
That's exactly right. Think of intermittent fasting as the health plan with the side effect of weight loss. And you never know what it's doing for your health, clearing out a fatty liver, clearing out your visceral fat. You just don't know, but lowering your insulin levels, so many
getting
things that it can be doing.
Like,
yeah.
That, like, that's why I don't think I have migraines anymore because I think I had so much inflammation.
Wow. Well, Anne Marie, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Well, thank you for having me and thank you for, well, I guess I'm so thankful that I found you and your book. You've changed my life. Like this whole process, it's on you. You did this.
Well, thank you. Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on.
Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.